Well, we can start and see who joins. So as far as I know, we have Jim, Paige, and Mike Goodwin on the call, and myself and Marshall here at TDHCA. Elizabeth may join us in a bit. And just for those of you who may not have been at the last meeting, I can just give a quick overview of what was discussed, even though we may not be able to approve our meeting minutes. We went over the draft Chapter 5, Identifying Barriers, and went through a bunch of edits to make to the various sections. A lot of it was clarifying language for programs that are health and human service programs that I just did not know as much about. So things like the 1915C Medicaid waivers, making sure we have correct language there, correct language for SGA rules and applicability of those, making sure that we also include language that clarifies the connection between parental assistance, criminal history, and mental illness and that barrier that we were describing. Also, in the next section on administrative limitations and limited coordination, we discussed the federal requirement to be the payer of last resort and making sure we clarify that. Clarifying language regarding the fragmentation of housing funding also amongst federal agencies, so not just at the state level but at the federal level as well. And adding federal eligibility requirements language into that section. For funding limitations, there was really only one main concern, and that was language about the Medicaid state plan versus Medicaid waivers and the difference between the two and the way that they're funded. And then for consumer barriers, we have three main comments about, one, we talked about ADA language about availability of paratransit and the definition of disability as it pertains to transportation. We discussed adding a section about program complexities as a barrier to consumers, not just local providers. And we also, that last one needs to be taken out. That was from the previous meeting minutes. I will scratch that one out. So those were the, some main concerns that we discussed on Chapter 5 draft. And then also, just so you guys know, the cross-agency committee also took a look at this draft and made a lot of good recommendations and edits to it that I have incorporated. So everyone's gotten a chance to see this chapter because I think it's important for us to make sure that everyone agrees on the identification of barriers. So that was basically the last meeting. And then this meeting, the main the main point would be to go over the preliminary service recommendations that were discussed by three of our Health and Human Service Agency representatives, Jonah Schwartz, Mark Gold, and Nick Doster, all attended a conference call about a week and a half ago now so that we could kind of establish some preliminary recommendations and get the entire committee's feedback on them and to make sure that we weren't missing anything or if we needed to maybe tweak some language. So that's kind of where we are now. Are there any comments before I start getting into these preliminary service recommendations? All right. I'll just start I'll do an overview of what they are, and then we can talk about, any one of them or maybe make some additions. So the first one is to match the current general revenue allocation for relocation activity with Medicaid administrative match. So this would be requesting Medicaid match from CMS that would double the current state general revenue appropriation for this purpose, and the overall goal here is to to further fund relocation specialists who assist nursing facility residents with transitioning back into the community. So this is something that is already currently done by Money Follows the Person, but could be expanded with the use of the Medicaid match. Anyone have any thoughts on that?
Actually, what does CMS stand for?
I'm sorry, it's the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services. It's under federal HHS.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's the main body that deals with Medicaid and Medicare.
Okay.
And we're relocating who? People who were almost to the point of full care facilities and relocating them back into a more independent living style?
Right. So this would be that persons in nursing facilities many times receive their Medicaid services directly for services within those facilities, but can also, if they are willing and able, if they would like to maintain their independence in the community, have that option through Money Follows the Person currently to move back with the assistance of these relocation specialists and use their Medicaid funds for services that exist within the community rather than the nursing facility.
And so we'd be asking for this match from CMS?
Correct. So DADS is the state agency that does Money Follows the Person, so it would be a recommendation that they request the Medicaid match from CMS.
Do we know what population we're talking about as numbers in the relevant? Are we talking about a couple hundred? Are we talking about a couple thousand?
Oh, I wish that Mark was on the call because he could definitely give you an answer to that. I mean, I know that it's
between.
Do you know?
I don't, you know. I would want to say it's maybe 800. I mean, I really don't know. I think Mark is the best to answer that.
But, you know, I know that since they started Money Follows the Person, they've had, I think it's what, between 1,200 and 1,500 people that they've returned to the community. So not a small amount. And I know that in terms of activity in comparison to other states, the Texas Money Follows the Person is the most active in the amount of people that transitions to the community, the largest volume by far. So it's something that we've found that we're good at. It's a practice that is working and is already in place. However, I know that they don't have a lot of funding for relocation specialists, which is kind of a key in helping the people who want to return to identify those people and help them return to the community. So are there any thoughts, comments on that one, or should we move on to the next one?
Yeah, just an overall question, and I don't know if that's a part of the recommendations that we need to. Is there any merit to identifying those that would not require, you know, rule changes versus financial increases, or, you know, what state, what federal? You know, there's some things that are policy, you know, modifications, and then there's others that will cost. And is there any merit to sort of separating those two out or prioritizing them? Or is that
I think there is. And I think that what makes sense, and let me know what you think, is that for this chapter on policy recommendations, the two main categories would be housing and health services. But then within those two main categories, I can break out the subsections by, the type of recommendation we're asking. So if it's primarily a funding-based recommendation, then do that. Or if it's primarily something to do with, like, a policy change. So maybe that's the way I break it down within the chapter.
That makes sense to me. And if somebody were reading it, they may be more receptive to things just in terms of that.
Sure, that's
a
great suggestion.
Just a thought. Yeah, I will make sure we structure the chapter that way.
Let me ask another stupid question. Is the recommendation number one essentially making DADS a central repository for relocation funding?
Well,
instead of, for example, if somebody has a stroke, they get put into a nursing facility, they are rehabbed to the point that they could move back to independent living, and somebody helps them with the sources of funding they get. And I assume now that they would have to make two applications, one to DADS and one to Medicare. Whereas if DADS asks for the matching funds, or they say, okay, we would be a central allocation point for all of those funds, and it would be a one-stop shopping rather than having to go out and find two or three people. Is that the purpose of this?
You know, I believe that a person that was seeking Medicaid would already be going to DADS. I feel like DADS already is kind of the one-stop for anyone receiving these type of long-term services and support. And this isn't changing the way that consumers receive those long-term services and supports. It's just expanding upon what it has already been done, what is already in place through Money Follows the Person.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're not changing the way that someone approaches receiving the services, because I believe that is already all under taken care of by DADS in terms of the type of services we're looking at for this council.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, well, why don't I go on to the second recommendation? So this is establish primary home care and community attendant services as the core programs for community-based long-term services and supports, and use other waiver services to wrap around state plan services. The way that Mark and Jonas described this recommendation was that currently, DADS is actually not compliant with CMS in the way that individuals access long-term services and supports, and this would actually make them more compliant by having those who need primary home care and community attendant services, they would be able to access those first, and then that would, I guess, in a way, free up other waiver services to those who are most in need of those additional services. And I wish Mark was on because he could tell you more about this, but basically it's making sure that primary home care and community attendant services are kind of core, I guess, prioritized programs within DADS array of service provision, I guess is the way you say it. And just so you know, this was a recommendation that came from the Promoting Independence Advisory Committee's report that was recommended by Mark.
There was and this really goes way back, but one of the things that I didn't see in here, and to be perfectly honest with you, I don't even know where the rules reside anymore or if they do, but there used to be a category called PASS or Personal Assistance Services, and there were, you know, we used to use it a lot for families to get respite, but I know I'm thinking about folks with physical disabilities who are looking for attendance care, and I don't know, you know, if that is a subset of the community attendance services.
I can answer that for you, actually. Look at me expanding my knowledge.
Look at you.
So community attendance services does the exact same thing that personal attendance services does. That personal attendant services still exists. It exists as a 1915C waiver service. But CAS, Community Attendant Services, is actually an entitled program in the state plan, so its funding is insured on a year-to-year basis, whereas the personal attendant services, just being a waiver, does not have entitled funding. It's based on the state appropriation. So community attendance services is actually, they pretty much are the same thing. They just exist in a different funding category than one another. And I'm pretty sure they have the same eligibility requirement because community attendance services, the state legislature granted that program to have eligibility of up to 300% SSI,
okay.
Unlike some of the other programs.
Sure.
That are state Medicaid plan services.
Okay, good. Boy, you are knowledgeable, aren't you?
Isn't she, though?
I'm learning. I'm learning slowly but surely. So I think that the reason why these two programs are being prioritized is because of the fact that they're in the state plan, they're entitled, We're not fearing that they are going to be drastically cut, you know, from biennium to biennium. So I think that was part of the recommendation here, is prioritizing their services. So I can go on to the next one. So the next one is to create an at-risk pool of waiver slots for individuals at imminent risk for nursing facility placement. And so this was a recommendation that mirrors what happened during the last legislative session, which there was action taken to fund home and community-based services for individuals with developmental disabilities that were at risk of being placed in an ICFMR. And so basically you'd be doing the same thing to have a pool of waivers available to those that are at risk for nursing home placement, similar to ICFMR placement for those with developmental disabilities.
That makes sense to me.
Makes sense? Okay. Any other thoughts on that one? Okay. I will move on. The next one is to support the expansion of the Aging and Disability Resource Centers through funding for additional communities throughout the state. So currently I think we have, 9 ADRCs throughout the state, something like that. Actually, the federal health care bill increased funding for ADRCs, but as a state, we have to apply for that funding. So it's now available. We just need to submit the application, and that way we can basically, what we're thinking here is to have greater scope geographically to meet all of the needs of communities, especially if we can get some representation in more rural communities. That would, I think, really benefit those stakeholders who we've heard from about the lack of rural capacity in their areas. And this is definitely a recommendation that's supported by the cross-agency committee, as they kind of are prioritizing the ADRCs and their own recommendations for cross-agency coordination.
So, Ashley, who would be applying for those funds?
Again, that would be DADS.
Okay.
They are the current funders of ADRCs. I mean, they apply for the funding from the federal government, and then they allocate that funding through a grant process to a local partnership of providers. Usually an area agency on aging will partner with an MHMR or another local nonprofit that's a service provider to create the ADRC in their community. So DADS accepts the applications for ADRCs and awards funding.
The one, number three, I'm sorry to go back, but the waivers, now who would those waivers coming from where?
So I believe the waivers that are in this recommendation are long-term services and supports waivers. So those are waivers that are Medicaid 1915C waivers under DADS.
Okay. Because maybe when we're doing these recommendations, like if I was a legislator, I may not know the various agencies and the funding streams, so we may want to be specific when we're saying, you know, pool of waiver spots from provided by DADS for individuals. You know, I'm just to make it where it's coming from.
Yes, I totally agree with you.
But I know that you guys have some waivers that y'all issue too. Maybe not for this specific purpose, but maybe for like homelessness, or I'm not sure, but so.
Oh, we have vouchers, you know, like our Section 8 or TBRA.
That's what I'm thinking of, vouchers. Yeah.
Yeah, I know the terminology is always different. Yeah, no, I will make sure that that within the recommendation we make sure we specify the state agency who already received funding or would be receiving funding of this nature for what program.
Okay, great.
Yeah. All right, I will make that addition.
Are we asking for new money on a continuous basis?
For which one? For which thing?
For the new disability resource centers.
So it was originally a pilot that the federal government started, I think it was like 5 years ago, and we applied, 2006, it was 2006, we first applied and allocated funding, and then I guess it's been, whatever bill it was that just the pilot money came from has renewed funding for ADRCs every couple of years, and the healthcare bill that was just passed once again, increased potential funding that states can apply for. So it's not, yeah, it's a continual federal fund based on what the legislature wants to renew funding for it.
Okay. The only reason I ask is that we're essentially talking about an expanding pilot entitlement program that I just am a little leery when we are tying something to continued federal funding in the current environment.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Well, I think maybe this recommendation is very present-based because of this health care bill funding. So, it may not be, I mean, I see what you're saying, that it may not be a continual funding source. But usually what happens is that these ADRCs, once they are put in place in the community and receive their original grant, they don't receive a continual DAD funding. Now I see what you're saying. Yeah, the ADRCs, once they are established and receive their one-time grant funding, they don't receive further grant funding. They find a way to operate self-sufficiently.
Okay, that's the big deal. The community supports the center.
Yes. That is the case. I will make sure that we make a note of that, that it is a one-time allocation from DADS to that ADRC, and then usually they have to be self-sufficient afterwards.
Does that work?
Yeah. One time. Yeah, so I'm gonna make sure that we have it in there. Okay, great. These are good questions because it makes me think about... think about things that I haven't thought about before with these recommendations.
Well, that poses the question in my mind, and who pays for it after the initial funding is set it up? Who pays the salaries of ADRC people and all that? Where does the money come from?
I'm not sure in terms of the partnership of local agencies, how they receive their funding. That's a question probably for Mark. I don't know that the answer to that. I know that I went to one of the Legislative Committee on Aging meetings, and there was a presentation by the Central Texas ADRC, and they may have addressed that. If maybe we can find the meeting minutes from that meeting. I think it was the April Legislative Committee on Aging meeting where they had a presentation, but I don't know the answer to that.
The true answer is that's not your concern. It's for your children's children's children.
Well, I mean, it'd be the same concern, you know, that federal money would go away. Maybe what if the community money was no longer there to support it? But what would you do then?
Well, you know, the answer is that depends on the community. The center's being put there because the community wants that facility to help that population. If that community decides they don't want to do it anymore, same thing as not filling potholes.
I mean, I think that the long-term stability of the ADRCs, I don't know if this is the place that we have that discussion. So maybe maybe it can be kind of an ongoing conversation that we have with dads about, you know, once after this first biennial plan comes out, you know, seeing kind of what we find out about, because, I mean, there are, like I said, 8 or 9 ADRCs currently in existence, and yes, they're not more than 4 or 5 years old, so we can only speak to currently what's happened, but, you know, figuring out the long-term sustainability of these is a good question ongoing for this council.
But this recommendation is also not unique to us. This is a recommendation that the other committee,
the promoting independence committee.
Yeah. We're just going along with what they're recommending. It's not our new one for us. It's just supporting what they're saying.
Well, it's new for the council to agree to support
it. But But it's not like we came up and said, hey, this is a wonderful idea. We saw the idea from the other place and said, okay, let's support that. That's what we're doing, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, well, why don't we go on to the next one? The next recommendation was to increase the number of nursing facility diversion programs. And so currently, DADS has a pilot project that is operating in two areas of the state, Central Texas and Tarrant County, that are basically our nursing facility diversions. Again, this is kind of along the same lines as our first recommendation in assisting residents who want to go back to the community and live independently to do so. And so this would basically it would need to be a request for additional funding for additional sites throughout the state. I believe the pilot is through general revenue, state general revenue. So it would be an expansion on the pilot. Any thoughts on that one?
No, I mean, I think it makes sense. It's just another one of those where we have to see what the price tag, or at least determine that it'll cost more. But it is a good pilot. That's one I'm familiar with because I live in Tarrant County.
All right. Okay, well, we can go on to the next one. The next one's pretty straightforward. It's basically increasing funding to existing 1915C waiver programs. Right now, there are extensive waiting lists for most of the 1915C waiver programs, and like I said before, they're funded through state general revenue, and so I believe that Mark was making this recommendation as a way to try to cut down the waiting list through availability of more waiver slots.
Sounds okay to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of hard to argue that one.
Yeah, right. Okay. The next one deals with, this is actually a DSHS program. This is to increase the funding to the assertive community treatment service packages as part of the resiliency and disease management program. So RDM is one of their main programs for I believe, persons with mental illness, and this would provide services to basically for people who have previously been hospitalized in one of our state hospitals to prevent future hospitalization by the provision of community-based services to those persons.
Regarding that, I was just looking at, I made a note here, peer support, and I don't know if we had anybody from Dishes on there, but we might want to look into that just because of the movement system-wide of reintroducing peer support. And I'm not quite sure how they're funding it in the community centers around the state, but they, you know, the community mental health centers, which you know, our subcontractors for Dishes, are hiring peer support specialists, and that's sort of a big, you know how the pendulum swings. We went all community services, and then we went all medication, and now we're sort of swinging back towards community supports, and that peer support was a big portion of that. So we might want to look at that in terms of increasing that as along with the ACT. You know, the ACT is the crisis team.
Mm-hmm.
So we might want to look at a recommendation regarding peer support.
That's a great recommendation. I will look into that. I'll ask Nick about that program so we can get a little bit more background. But I think that's
okay.
A great recommendation. I agree. All right. Well, I will do some follow up on that. The next recommendation we have here is to provide community based services and support for individuals leaving state mental health facility system. So this one and then the next one, I guess I should probably they're kind of in tandem. The next one is to include behavioral health services and supports as service options within all 1915C waiver programs. And so the reason why these are in tandem to one another is that, you know, currently one of the barriers that exists is a person with, you know, a behavioral health issue is not eligible for Medicaid services unless they have a co-occurrence of another type of disability. So this would be saying services and supports, well, that this community should be eligible for the same services and supports that a person with a different type of disability is eligible for under 1915C and that kind of, in the same way, allows those persons to be eligible for some of the relocation opportunities out of state hospital systems. So there's currently a pilot in Bexar County. This is, the pilot is run through DADS.
I'm fine with it. Makes sense.
And I think this directly addresses, you know, one of the barriers that we identified. So I think that's a good thing. Any other thoughts on these two?
No. Thanks. Fine.
Okay. And so then the last recommendation that Jonas and Mark and Nick came up with was funding for direct service and support workers. So currently, most direct service workers that are, you know, working as attendants in the community receive close to minimum wage. And so this would be reimbursing them at a higher rate so that we can recruit and retain this workforce. And I know that this was something that Mark was very excited about. So I remember that. I remember that specifically.
Yeah, I love this one. I think it's super important. Super, super important.
You know, the state of Washington, finally, the legislature didn't respond enough until they actually, it won't happen here, but they actually passed an initiative and unionized in the state of Washington. So they're part of a union, and they get benefits, and they have, you know, and so they finally, an issue passed, and so it's, they changed it up there.
Yes, I mean, it's definitely an important issue, I think, nationwide. That's something that I think, we don't, you know, because I think that we don't address the workers as much in this plan, but I think that this recommendations chapter is an important place to do so. So,
yeah.
And in a way, I mean, we're also, you know, it kind of ties into, you know, what Jim was saying about a recommendation for peer support specialists, because it's, again, it's those people who are working in the community that need to, you know, we need to recognize that unless we pay them well, they're not going to remain in their jobs, and we're going to, you know, have a lot of turnover and lose the knowledge that they have. So I think, these are great.
And you get what you pay for. I mean,
right.
Yeah.
That's been an issue that's plagued the group home and, you know, the ICSMRs in Texas for years, because the rates are so low compared to other states. You know, you're bringing people in at minimum wage or below or to care for people, and, well, here you go, you know.
And you just can't, the turnover is just horrendous. I mean, I use people every day, and I started a few months ago because of some support through long-term interest care stuff that we have through the agency here that I could apply for and get. Started actually using an agency. I've never done that before. You would assume it'd be easier, but it's not, because I interviewed people in two or three agencies, and they all had the same problem. They just can't keep people because they don't pay enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And there's no benefits, and the hours are now not very secure, and it's just hard.
Yeah. Okay, great. Well, I'm glad that you guys asked some relevant questions and agreed with what Nick and Mark and Jonas had come up with. Are there any additions besides Jim's addition? Are there any other additions on the services side that people can think of?
I couldn't think of any.
All right. Well, that was nice and quick. As you all know, I just want to remind you one more time, because that's my job, that the next meeting of the council is, of the full council, is Friday, July 9th, and we decided to add this meeting so that way we can, as an entire council, go over all of the chapters that have been discussed during the past, what is it now, 3 months of conference calls. And so what I'm going to be doing is compiling all the chapters into a draft plan. There may be, you know, some small holes, like, you know, the executive summary or something like that, but all of the main chapters will be accounted for by that time, and I will submit it to you in advance of the July 9th meeting. That way you guys can come prepared to talk about it. And I think, oh yes, and the agenda has been posted on the Texas Register as of 10:30 a.m. this morning, which was when we started this conference call, actually. So yes, the agenda is set. It's very simple. We're basically just going over the plan and talking about the public comment period and then where to go from there in terms of outreach about the plan. So I will send you guys all the agenda, but it's also on the Texas Register. Any questions about that upcoming meeting?
All day in it, darling.
Is that Brian Heatley? And it starts at 10 a.m., and I will make sure that you guys get all the relevant information.
Sounds good.
Right. Great. Oh, and then, Paige, did you say you couldn't be there?
Right, I can't.
Darn. Well, if you want to submit any written comment to me about the draft plan, I can always bring that and present it.
And normally I'm up in Dallas on Fridays, but I can work it out.
Okay, thank you, Jim.
So we won't get will we get the draft like a couple of days before, or how's that going to work, actually? Or is it just going to be presented there at the meeting?
No, you guys will get it in advance.
Okay.
Yeah.
If I have any comments, I'll certainly provide them to you.
Okay, great.
We'll have a court reporter there to take a transcript.
Yeah.
And it's probably going to be the better part of the day for that meeting as well. But, Paige, I guess if you wanted to send someone.
Well, I would do that, but we're having a staff development.
Oh, okay. Nobody available. Okay, but we will have the court reporter for detailed notes. So
yeah.
We can certainly send that out.
Thanks.
Uh-huh. All right, great. Well, I think that's it, everybody. And this is our last conference call, so thank you for sticking in there every other week and being available.
You've made it easy.
Thanks for doing it.
Yeah, thank you. All right, well, I will see you all on the 9th.
Okay, bye.
Bye.